Members, Deputy Vice Chair of the Fishman daily. Now, the day remains determined at the moment. However, you then have to expect the outer possible date of elections, which is your constitutional 90 days. So you come from the president of Bulgaria backward in case of the president of Bulgaria. So the vacancies that will occur after today will be held in a bit unless the NEC have also been requested that by election be conducted. And the reason would be maybe the vacancy an imbalance in and affect the governments of the respective Israelis. But generally, all those vacancies that are obtained from today will be handled. We have factored the contract judgment into our processes. We've reviewed the self-recruitment criteria and have been saying with political parties in the GOC. All our expansion that, in other words, stuff that we procure on contract to increase our capacity to manage the exigencies of the election are on board, and all municipalities are sufficient staff to confront the challenges of the election. We considered the procurement of registration material. We are now analyzing election day procurement. The consultations with COCTA are ongoing. The Commission has been working with the SY Minister and they continue to play with the Minister. We think that in the next few weeks those consultations will be considered to enable the Minister to make appropriate announcements with respect to the election date. We are analyzing the independent audit of the local system. And this will be, we will share that audit report with political parties in the PLC. And in particular, I trust that they too may, will have an opportunity to put in the local system and satisfy themselves that the system does what it intends to do. Our IT environment will also undergo a testing in the first quarter of the end of the year, including the security testing by the relevant group players. We are finalizing the development of the electronic system to be used as an alternative to the manual transcription of the submission of the list of candidates. And we have a planned session for the next administration with political parties planned for the 25th of October. Our contact service members of the public can use to check the registration status and related information has been rising since November 2015. We have briefed the leaders of political parties. Bilateral briefings with leaders of political parties. Calls have been covered, the one outstanding at the moment. And before we go to the election, we'll do two dry runs to first test our systems to see perhaps where there may be things that require handling. So before we go to the election, we'll have two dry runs. Now, on the voters' roll, we are interacting with Statistics South Africa. They have given us data which suggests that there will be the 4.1 million South Africans of voting age and above. They projected the figure to May 2016. And if you look closely at the data, it suggests that the biggest gap, in other words, the biggest
economy and possibility that you might consider exploring. And a lot of these young people who go in and apply for these smart IDs for the first time, there might be an opportunity to encourage them to register at the same time. I wonder if it's something that you considered. Do you want to make comments just on that? You talked about the strategy for the younger market for motion registration, but you haven't mentioned anything in particular about the GCP%. I know you want to go something lively and young and energetic for the young markets and the communication strategy. Is there something in particular that you're doing to attack the 20 to 29 age group? Here's a few other issues that I want to raise by IG. It's not something that's new, something that you're very familiar with, that our opposition political parties have been raising for a long time, and I may put it again on the table. The first issue is the issue of state resources being used in the election campaign. Again, I want to ask if the IG is planning to do anything to prevent that from happening again in this election campaign, or you can again turn a blind eye to it. It is having an impact on the fairness of the election campaign, and opposition parties have put this on record on a number of occasions. I'd like to hear a straightforward answer from the IEC whether or not you're going to do anything about it, or you're going to ignore it again in this election. Which brings me to the point about SATU and their members' involvement in local government elections as officials of the IEC. And again, as these opposition parties have raised it with you, and I want to hear your response on whether or not we can expect any change in this election or I'm going to ignore it again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the presentation that you just received now. But however, I just want to get clarity on the slide number 10. The demarcation process was concluded in December 2015, but the point that follows the point, it talks about the outstanding demarcation matter which arise only ahead of municipal elections. I'm not clear about that. As well as the increased number of court challenges, if you can get the status quo on court challenges. I think I'm covered about the youth full of situation here, because Honorable Jen has just raised it. And on that number 5 as well, you talk about 22,803 working districts in 2016, but you mentioned something about Mangaung. I didn't hear what you're saying about Mangaung. What Mangaung has to do about this number. On slide number 9, Chair, the preparations for the elections, slide number 1. I just want to get clarity because we have made some submissions as individuals, as postal parties. If those submissions were taken care of, if I can go straight to what we have submitted as the special votes, we would like to hear from the IEC how it's going to manage that, because we have serious concern regarding the special votes. Whereby you find that a old woman is out, is blind, and she wants to vote for EFF, and then only the IEC that is allowed to tell this old lady or old woman or our chief go for them. But you know, as the Honourable Senior Deputy should start to, which some of the IEC staff members also not in when it comes to IEC. The role of the party agent, what is the IEC going to make sure that the role of the party agent during the special vote is taking place? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's hear from Honorable Ngo.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would like to thank the IEC for the input that we received. I remember speaking to the very delegation and stating that I would be a very little woman the day I see a woman among them. There are so much of men among them, and I think the next time we meet with Mr. Mashini and his team, there will definitely be gender census, if I should put it like that. The first thing I would like to address is the matter of SADU. I think the matter of SADU, the IFC has actually engaged with the IFC on this matter on several occasions. It is still a matter that is sensitive, that is worrying. Yes, we'll have your experience, like other members belong to other federations, but when you come up with an organization like CASM having their cars, having their nuclear ratio, which revenue used bigger, that they will be supporting the ANC, then it makes us to be quite worried about the measure. So I think just an update on the measure of starting with assistance. The second letter would be on the Concord judgment. Can we just be honest about this matter? So just get an honest response from the IEC and get this relation. Of course, this is this matter because we had as well, I think it was a day or so back, when the people of a particular place in Togo were actually saying they're going to court again, they're going to court again. How much of this is actually having an effect on the dealing or on the work of the IEC? Because one is worried about this case, because if they keep on traveling in the court and they still be an extension of the election. On the slide preparations for the election, there's this letter where Honorable Mama, they actually spoke about the matters where he said he hopes that parties can be taken on board. That is the finalization, the letter for the people in the independent audit. This would like to take on board as political parties, so that we get an understanding of that. They're saying that even political parties can be taken on board. Even on the testing, the key systems, we are aware that we do go forth with our national members in the PLC, would like you to keep doing that so that we can get a real system that will assist. My last point is on the electoral system, especially this manual submission. How hard is the process? We do understand that it's going to be paperless, where you actually have an electronic system that is going to be used. How hard is that system? Because we say it's actually a system that all of us are looking forward to. And lastly, there's this growth phase and trust in electoral processes. I think it's not so much lying. But there's a letter there on President's transparency in enhancing via. There's a few bullets. I'm going to be addressing the bullets in observers. Who are these observers? How are they qualified to be observers? Because there's a point here that we've got observers. We also get a certain education point for these observers. Because it's quite important for us as political parties that if there is a process where these observers are put on board, then we need to know about it. And I'm very grateful that we have representation of my party, the national PLC, the national commission PLC, a lot of information that is given to them comes to us. So this information, on most of what I've asked, is given to them, will definitely be getting, but I would appreciate a bit of an input on some of the evidence today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Honorable Kennedy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for the presentation. I think most of the questions have been asked, but I'm going to just to everyone and the cases that said in the issue of duplicating as much as we know that it's also in our duty as voters to see that you go and look and vote, you go and register so to vote. So I'm also concerned about the banks. That is from the other social media which I'm using. But to my understanding, most formula to those social media. What challenge is there for him also for them? Secondly, on Facebook, 5 and 7, I don't know, I said in the alignment process. But I just want to check. As much as you know that from 1994 to 1999, we had a problem of national unity. But for example, I just want to check 5 groups that in the case of 1999, what happened to 1994 festival elections? What were the numbers? Or don't we have any? And also on the first local government election in 1995, I don't see a study from there. I only see a study from 1999, maybe. Yes, I understand that maybe it's because of the but I don't understand why on 1999, if you think about it, but it makes us ignore those first democratic elections. Lastly, I also have a reserve to talk about education, because really, I'm quite sure what the show is like to take us back. my concern is on the issue of school language for working. Now, has got any infection in school programs? The use of schools as voting stations? Or the issue of infection in school by government? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much,
thank you, Mr. Mamadou, for your presentation. And my question is, what strategy is IEC going to employ to affect the registration of the youth? And on page 9, the bullet point 6, review of the electoral staff, recruitment criteria, and everything with the political parties. Why political parties should come to the floor? This is not a human resource issue. Why should political parties come to check which people are going to employ? And I think the IEC is going to really assist us here, because with the past 2014 elections, we were taken to ransom by propaganda by some of the other political parties that didn't even understand the process of processing from the DG how, you know, the ballot papers are being processed. I think that one is going to be a massage, teaching other political parties that sometimes they get excited and sometimes they are so curious about the processes of how ballot papers are being processed from the DG. And I hope that you are going to assist us also, because we had a challenge, especially with the count. I don't know whether it's the journalism or whatever. People took some counts of other political parties, which really I think is just totally unfair. The issue of the African National Congress, AAC, vis-a-vis that other one that was, I don't know what was that part, which really was very confusing, especially for our voters. I think we could have really what we got as the ANC, we could have upmarked our numbers. So, be careful. ANC, and that other kind of political party I mentioned.
Honorable thank you very much, Honorable. Now, in fact, I just want to explain the issue of open charter. Are we saying that people of non-political affiliation should not be allowed to be presiding officials? Because a lot of people are in different unions, and a lot of people also are of non-political participation. If we discover that so and so is a member of a certain political party, do we then intervene and say, no, well, discover so and so is a member of this party or that party, and therefore we object? How do we get this? Because on the other side, it could be perceived as an unfair discrimination, given the fact that the majority of workers things can accosted. And then and now if you say that the COSATU, because it is aligned to the ANC, therefore members of COSATU should not be presiding officers. Are we not discriminating unfairly?
Thank you very much. Of course, it's unfortunate that, you know, once they are appointed by a particular board or institution, that has to behave in a particular manner. We expect that all those people must hold the line of the code of conduct and the principles that govern that institution. And I'm just worried that we are not seeing probability of discrimination being honorable members. I think there are just a few things that while I'm responding to these questions, I just wanted to actually indicate what happens in a voting station when the party agents refuse to co-sign the result. What is the impact? What is the consequence of that? And then also just to speak to the citizen questions, then the security of the voting station. The security of the voting station this time around. I just wanted to really hear on those specific things that I've seen at that time. And God bless you all.
Thank you. Thank you. Question, honourable members. I would request the colleagues to respond to these questions as follows. Starting with the questions raised by honourable Nashay about the voting registration survey, Mr. Mamadou, collaboration with the former guest, Mr. Mamadou. Regarding the rest of the majority of the voters, how are they accepted? That's one rule. And then, regarding the issue of the code of conduct and the state usage of state resources, Mr. Kiman, and the environment and policies of the Mr. Kiman. And regarding the honorable first questions, the issue on the demarcation of gender demarcation matters, that is called legal matters, Mr. Mahmoud. The Mahmoud Clarity, Mr. Mahmoud. The special votes management and checks and balances with respect to party agents, literally presiding or also representing the people, and Mr. Mahmoud. And then with respect to one of the first questions, questions was the update on the schedule. Again, I think that's a good plan. Similarly, the update that raised up on the combat judgment and the communication and how the commission is managing that, Mr. Freeman. And then taking the facts of the board to discuss to the various and the other systems which are in place, Mr. Mahmoud. I think there was one other question that I can pick up from the forum, but the last one was the issue of the appointment and the registration of the officers. Probably you could respond to just share the other members of the domestic and the international observers. On this one, I would ask Reverend Fina to actually face the members about the managing the autonomous issue and how it is getting raised. And then the targets and strategies for the farming communities, and who are we doing that? And also the question of why our statistics begin in 1999 instead of the 94 elections and so on. And then the issue of the usage of school venues and when does that affect the normal activities of the schools. And then the honorable member actually was the issue of the youth strategy again. I think it's related to the previous question on the strategies of the farming communities, if you could link the possibility of the youth strategies. And then the
Writers Association and how the commission is a good balance with some of the considerations in terms of employment. And then lastly, there's number one, the issue of when political parties agents refuse to sign, and the last two questions that we will put to. So if yes, you can start and deal with all the questions, and the commission has the floor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The question is raised by Magnum Hussein. There was a broad campaign which seems to The municipal electorate provides that where the voter is given assistance, one of such agents may be present. It's not ideal from a constitutional point of view, but in the circumstances, that's what the law provides. It's a matter that occupies our attention in terms of training. The independent audit, Honorable Mbongo, yes, it's part of the transparency to which we are committed, because we want to assure political parties that the result system does what it's intended for. And to that extent, we want to provide to ourselves a report of that independent audit. But we don't want to stop there. Should you be minded to doing that on your own as a political party, those opportunities will be discussed in the party licensing committee, and a date will be set when your expert can come to look at the question. The electronic submission of digital candidates is a very exciting innovation in our view, because should this process work well, as we think it will, it positions us as one of the first EMBs in the world to deploy that type of innovation. So we are quite upbeat about it, and I think many parties are so upbeat as well. So we are doing the same together with political parties on the 25th of February, so that we embody them properly and that we can critically look at the processes that underpin the operation of the system. The 1994 data, the issue is that we started to build a repository of the information ahead of the 1999 election. So, in terms of electronic warehousing of the data, we have it in hard copy reports and so on, the data. It's part of our history, it's part of our evolution as a constitutional democracy. The electronic recording of the data came at a point in time in the history, which is what is reflected in our report. The 66% of voting stations in the country are schools. So it is important, therefore, to maintain that connection between ourselves and the school management. Because in schools, the public infrastructure, computers, the public infrastructure, like electronic boards, and iPads, and so on. So that equipment belongs to the people of South Africa. And part of the reason why that makes us the business card between us and the school management team is to ensure that we use the school without destabilizing the integrity of the safety of the public equipment which is available at that school. So that makes us can't be lost, because if we do, the asset control procedures can be undermined, and it's never the intention of the Commission to undermine those types of things. The handling of ballot paper. the security of the voting station is a matter that we deal with in terms of the mass joint, the election priority committee, of which the Electoral Commission is a member. They have plans that they share with us regarding how they're going to safeguard the voters, electoral equipment, as well as voters. You know that the levels of electricity qualification are not the same as on election day, but we are led there by the South African Police Service with all other group players, including Home Affairs, Telecom, and other places.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, honourable members. Let me start first with the issue related to the violation of the Code of Conduct. We have emphasized in all the discussions that we have had at the electoral level with all the political parties the importance of political parties and candidates contesting elections to observe the provisions within the Code of Conduct. And we have indicated that we are putting in place mechanisms to be able to deal with those violations. There is a process now which the Commission is analyzing, the study member of which the Commission is analyzing, and we should be dealing with all those kind of issues that are related to the offenses. But we still want the political parties themselves to take initiative, because the Commission will not be everywhere. And therefore, it is the responsibility of the political parties to raise objections if they see something untoward happening in the electoral process. And that process is going to go a long way in terms of implementing the issues, particularly related to the violations of the Code of Conduct. So we are at a very advanced stage. I'm so sorry. We are at a very advanced stage in terms of dealing with that particular aspect. Now, the issue of such, and I think it is important for me to indicate that we have gone a long way as a commission to deal with this matter. The issues that I raised by Honourable Clementi are indeed correct. The facts as put by Honourable Clementi are correct. That we can't, as a commission, be discriminating against any member participating in the electoral process. However, having listened to all the political parties and having listened to all the objections that political parties have raised in relation to this issue, we decided to do something about it as a commission, to try to reduce these numbers to the level where it is possible for us to still be able to run the process with integrity and without any difficulties at the station level. If I could just indicate, when we started in 1998 with our first registration, out of almost 280,000 staff members that we had even in that stage, we had almost 99% of them being constituted by people coming from the citizens. You call that at that time, we were told as I see that there were not enough resources for us to employ our own people. So we relied on the civil service. We have those elections. We have teachers, we have soldiers, we have police, we have quite a number of people helping us to run that first registration. Then when we started employing our own people, clearly we still relied on a pool that we had developed during the 1998 registration processes. But we have now moved from almost 98% of our staff being the civil servants through almost 8%, not just 1%, 8%, which indicates that we have actually moved in a very significant way in reducing the number of teachers, because we don't have a relationship whatsoever with such an organization. But to the extent that we've been using in some of the stations, teachers, we have tried to make sure that we can replace teachers with people coming from the right of them, because it has itself, as well in terms of dealing with the economies of those people who do not have any resources anymore. But at the same time, as we do this, we must understand that sometimes there is a risk, because if I'm employed, you train me, and just before you deploy me, I find a full-time job. I can't leave the full-time job, and I come and work where I see opportunities. I'll take an opportunity that arises. So there's a risk that using people who have preparation for them. And at the same time, we are trying to do this. But the second aspect of the commission is simple, is that whatever happens at the voting station must not be compromised by the fact that we've got people who do not understand the process. In some areas, the only people, because of the migration of people to other areas, that are able to assist us are teachers. And then we will lose those teachers, but within the framework that I have already outlined. Another aspect that we've been emphasizing is the political advantages, is that because in most instances, when you have a teacher, either it's a design office or a deputy design office, we have submitted the names of all of selling officers and deputy selling officers to the local party liaison committees to make sure that the party liaison committee at that level is able to raise issues if there are issues about that particular person presiding over the election. So those are the mechanisms that we've put in place. And that's why we think that the mechanisms that we've put in place are working. We have explained this in all the bilateral discussions that we've had with political parties, and there seems to be an understanding from all the political parties that we've met in relation to our explanation on this particular aspect. The issue related to Concord and its judgment. You know, the Deputy CEO, Manolo, and myself have been spending a lot of time in talk since the judgment, making sure that we are able to address all the issues that have been raised within the judgment. And then all the political parties have been satisfied with mechanisms that were put in place to deal with the COVID situation. I understand that a day or so, about yesterday or so, there is a person who was speaking and trying to criticize the process. But we are not familiar because there's no with those facts. Because such an issue has not been presented to us as a commission. Sometimes, you know, political parties do say things just to attract the attention of media. And when it comes to tendering to utilize the instruments that are there in law and the relationship that we have with them, they don't come to us. But it comes, for example, information when it comes to newspapers and print, but we have not received anything of that sort. And I did indicate the following. In relation to Concord, there were only three areas where we found wanting as the electoral commission. The first one was that we had submitted the voters' roll to candidates and political parties late. And secondly, that we had submitted the voters' roll without addresses to candidates and the political parties. And third, that we had allowed people who were not ordinary residents in areas where the elections were taking place to register there and to vote. And then we have dealt with all those three areas in our interaction with the program candidates and political parties. And as I've indicated to you, there is an understanding and an acceptance from all the political parties. They signed the code of conduct, and everything is going according to plan in relation to our preparations for local. And we don't expect any major difficulties. I think I've covered all the issues that you said I must cover, Chairman. But there was an issue that was raised again on the customer, that's not been given to me, but I'm going to try to deal with that issue. Why the statistics, I'm not too sure that. So the statistics of paper.
Thank you very much, Chair. I've been asked to deal with two questions, one from Honourable Gomo on the election observers. The Electoral Act number 84 allows any person to apply to the Commission as an election observer. requirement of the election by all sides. It's an international practice that is very well supported by our coalition, because we believe that although we are confident that we manage the election in terms of the legislation, I think it is good for us to be independently observed for the credibility of our processes. And the observers can apply either as local observers, domestic observers, or international observers. They apply to the Commission. The Commission looks at whether they meet the requirements of impartiality, and if they are satisfied with the capacity of the particular organization, then we accredit them. For this coming election of 2016, we have already published the first round of panels on the newspapers and on the other platforms. And on the 2nd of September 2015 to the 31st of October 2015, we invited applications, and out of the process, 21 organizations have already been accredited. We will be opening, after the first registration, another window for applications to be made, and that will be published later on the various platforms. There was a question that was raised, Honorable Chairperson, about the confusion that might be caused to voters when parties that have names that are similar or colors that are similar follow one another in the ballot. Political parties, remember that we are using presently a system where we invite political parties, and there is a draw. And whichever party is successful on that draw becomes the first in the ballot paper. And the rest of the parties follow alphabetically after the party. And last time, it was the various fronts plus. And that was successful, and then the ballot paper was ordered accordingly. That practice has been criticized by the international observers, that what they observed at the last election is that there were two parties with almost similar names, and the colors are almost similar as well, and that can create a confusion to the vote. And what we need to do is what the international observers say to us. We have gone back to the drawing board to try and see how we can avoid the kind of situation. The Commission at present is discussing a possibility of having a draw where they announce for all the parties, and you draw a number, and your sequencing is based on that number. We have not finalized that, but we are just so that we depart from what was the case in the past, that moved to the new system.
Thank you, Chair. And if we missed any of the questions of the honourable members, please get transferred to this person who might have skipped something. I just want to actually underpin something, which is the issue of the code of conduct, and secondly, the issue of the kill that gets should upload. We have a unique system as a country, which is the particle system. We urge that these issues and any concerns by any political party should optimally be raised within that particular structure, and they exist on the team there for 3 years. And those are the structures that enable us also to actually co-determine many decisions that affect the elections. So we may not exhaust everything, but we keep on emphasizing that that is an important aspect. Now, on the issue of the code of conduct, specifically, I think there is the issue of usage of
understanding for Portuguese about what happened during the Brexit and World Cup that would enable us to process any concerns that may arise or any allegations that may arise. And the process, according to the justice process, it does not require that actually you even have to expend a lot of legal expenses because the chief use of friendly to the political parties. Now, the Electoral Commission does not and is not sufficiently geared that it can deal with all the various allegations that may arise. We therefore urge that we collaborate through the international structures, through the appeals to the Commission, but this does not substitute the what's called the Electoral Court, which will expedite any of the concerns or any allegations that may arise. But we remain committed in ensuring that the ultimate outcome of the elections has what is important, the integrity, and can withstand any international scrutiny with respect to those particular statements. And thank you.
I may not have heard you on the question that related to farm strategy. The farm. not necessarily similar to court, but it's just a procedural report that we are expected to send this report to the House, just to tell them on the procedure that we comply with the procedure.
rights of individuals from still present bureaucratic inefficiencies in the DHA with renewing permits, many of which are subject to court cases, amendments in the bill should be clarified by the addition of the following section. So, in addition to saying that there are certain sanctions when you overstay your permit, they're saying when application for an extension or renewal of an extension has been made in good time, as in you're applying to extend within the required time, such as 3 months, and no official response has been received by the department, it can be presumed until official notification of the contrary that extension applied or has been granted. So basically they're saying if it's not your fault that you haven't applied for an extension, then you shouldn't be penalized being declared as a desirable if the department hasn't gotten back to you at all. The third one there is on clause 2, section 50. It's an individual, Mr. Dedon, that a foreigner be able to leave the Republic of South Africa within 10 days should their visa or appeal application be rejected before being declared as undesirable. It's actually already provided for in the regulations to the Immigration Act. But I'm simply suggesting that this be dealt with directly in the Act itself. This would allow for scenarios where there was a backlog in the processing of applications resulting in foreigners overstaying whilst waiting for feedback on applications, in either case. There are then submissions by the Forum of Immigration Practitioners of South Africa, a fifth of the sort, which refer to the entire bill. They indicate there could be many significant unforeseen consequences that result in, such as the separation of families. This is ill-informed and violates the principle of the Constitution in that one is innocent until proven guilty. Now foreigners will be sanctioned harshly by being declared undesirable without allowing due legal processes. So basically the bill would allow them to appeal after being declared undesirable rather than allowing processes prior to being declared undesirable. Secondly, they said their amendment will be vigorously jurisdiction that an African passport should be considered, which is definitely legal migration, is not confusing. So, I don't know just how this should be dealt in the book, but I guess you can say that the security, fourthly, due to high rejection rate and processing times of applications by the Fed, the Visa Certification Service privately managing applications on behalf of the DNA will no longer accept applications where the temporary resident visa is valid for 1 month or less, with the last 7 days before the expiry date. So, if a temporary resident visa is valid for 90 days or less within 30 days before the expiry date, and if a TRV is valid for longer than 3 months within 60 days before the expiry date. So basically, this company, they indicate, or the BFS, they indicate, is shortening the time that is allowed, or extending the time that is allowed for an extension is allowed, for extension is considered, rather than giving more time, or rather than allowing short time for people to extend their permits, as is provided for by the legislation. Because they can't register their application in time. Relocation online, which goes in January. He indicates that the sanction of victim those parties that have overstayed should take the following into consideration for exemption for sanctions. So these include when these applications are not available for the DHA within 3 days, the African visa can be after the visa has expired, but before receiving his or her application outcome from the DHA. So this is a repeat of that from some of the other submissions saying that the delays within the DHA shouldn't impact negatively on the applicants. Secondly, they should be suitable for sanctions if, in the event where visa application is rejected and the applicant no longer has a valid visa and wishes to leave the Republic, so to kind of repeat. If they actually didn't have the visa, the public applications are refused. Thirdly, if a foreigner has submitted an appeal application which can take up to 12 months to be finalized, they should be considered for exemption. Being held in captivity, being held hostage, experiencing trauma, undergoing emergency medical treatment, pregnancy when they remain on fire as decided by medical practitioner, death of a relative, second step, kinship, or any other exceptional circumstances, they should be considered from an exemption of being exchanged at the entire world. In such cases, the legal partner would be required to submit proof of the government from civil conflict to South Africa. The court official will allow the administration to allow such a foreigner to be the Republic of Ireland. So then the next submission is by Ahead Migration International. They're saying that unintended consequences of the care of those that are staying their permits as undesirable are there being no provisions for where the DHA has not dissolved it, has not dissolved the pending applications when foreigners leave, so it's a repeat of them and the simple provisions for increased illegal action against DHA from pending applications in which they mostly lose, again a repeat. Additional costs to the state and Dutch taxpayers for these appeals. Families being separated, creating frustration and bad business for the country. 5, not following international best practice where Africans present themselves and pay a fine, which in fact constitutes state revenue. And 6, no recourse to corporations and their staff with applications pending for up to 3 years. They give an example of actually in this case. The Commission on Gender Equality, which comments on Regulation 27, say that reference is made to a prescribed area in which is defined in Regulation 27, which speaks to Section 32 of the Act, and goes on in the bill. The regulation is intended to deter national or pro-national from overstaying, but seeks to achieve this in a reasonable manner, which repeatedly is subject to a period of 2 years, sanction or a person who overstays more than 30 days. In the sanction of foreigners. In instances where illegal foreigners are, so that's the one point. Secondly, is in instances where illegal foreigners are accompanied by a minor child, the minor should be excluded from the sanction. The not working system is the thinking is they want the children to be excluded from being sanctioned. This may prejudice minors who wish to return to a parent in the public or for them impractical. They basically said they have no submission at all. There's more detail provided in the regulations that they like to comment at that stage. The representative from the HDP in Bitbank said these are potentially should close all entities in South Africa by immigrants who have overstayed by not reapplying beforehand, just because they are taking working opportunities from other children. So that's basically calling for even stricter regulations. Mr. Bomela indicates support, and Mr. Tebe of engineering projects is making a specific request for Zimbabwe official participation, but I mentioned it has nothing to do with the vote, to do with the whole campaign, which I'm going to not say that he's basically asking for his family to be given extra permits in addition to him, which is against us creating this law.
Thank you very much. I think all our members will understand that there's no intention to finalize this today, but the intent is to show that we have consolidated the rules and we hear the response from the department so that when we go back to our caucus, then we are able to have positions on some of the particular issues. As we have indicated in the past on other bills, that sometimes input from interested parties, sometimes it constitutes issues that need to be taken care of in the regulations. We'll find out the raising on the main bill. And then I think we should just be aware about that and can we then request this department to respond to the input, because I think we have administratively communicated the input to the department, that we should be ready with some sort of responses on some of them, and clarify some other issues that some interested persons may have made, because there are a lot of issues that have been raised, which, as I said before, that are not necessarily relevant to the deal that is needed to. If you are ready to the department, can you take us on and show that we try and stay within our the remaining 10 minutes? Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chief Intervention of the Portfolio Committee and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. I will go through the responses that our response to the already responses that were included in Chairperson for the Shape of Challenge, and just maybe the institution of the person that has raised and our response to that. With regard to the agri-action submission, the issues raised here are administrative and in nature, and indicated in the submission itself, and may be addressed outside of the parliamentary legislative process. It also has to do with some policy issues concerning the process of revising the immigration policy or relooking the immigration policy. We will be going for public consultations next year, and we believe that every essay and some of the institutions that responded to this will have a chance to input on broader policy matters to meet that particular period of time. With regard to the Banking Association of South Africa, Chairperson, in principle, we should not legislate for inefficiencies of administrative, but for inefficiencies and administrative challenges as proposed by BASA. The Department has introduced systems to improve adjudication turnaround times and is able to successfully adjudicate applications within 8 weeks. Within an 8 to 3 years prior to the expiry of the visa. The major challenge for the department are applicants that are holding tourist visas who are coming, for instance, holiday purposes and apply for extension within a shorter period of before the expiry of the visa. So what happens is 7 days, 5 days, a day before the expiry of the visa, the person now decides which he wants to stay for a longer period in South Africa, then applies for an extension of the visa, and that in itself causes problems because by the it takes us a time to adjudicate those applications or renewals, and by the time they need to leave, we have not done or they have not received any feedback from the department yet. So that is why we then reverted to us receiving renewals or applications for renewals 30 days before the expiry of the visa, because we do believe that if you are in the country and you know that you are going to extend your visit or your tour of South Africa, you know beforehand because you need to make certain arrangements for that, and you should be able to apply any time to the department saying that I would need an additional month or 2 days or 2 weeks to stay in the country. And if we have that lead time, we are able to deal with these applications speedily for the renewals, as we are currently doing when people apply before the 30 days before the expiry of their visa. But the challenges do come when we only have a short period to do that. With regard to the first submission, Chairperson, the department briefed and presented information to Parliament in 2010 and 2011 when considering the Immigration Amendment Bill, now the Amendment Act of 2011, regarding the issue of administrative fines not being a deterrent. So we had passed that being presented and gave our argument with regard to that. It is incorrect and misleading to say that there is nothing that may be done once a person is declared undesirable, as there is a process of appeal. So anyone that has been declared undesirable has the opportunity or the right to appeal that decision by the Department of Home Affairs. With regard to the submission made by Ms. Bonde, the current standing operation procedure addresses the issues that she raises. In the case of a person with a jury, his application has been rejected and her email in his or her possession rejection letter, the control immigration officer determines whether to file the departure is within 10 working days of acknowledging the receipt of the notice of rejection. If that is the case, the person will not be declared undesirable. So if your visa has been rejected, you have 10 days to appeal that rejection. Should you leave within that period, a 10-day period, you are not declared undesirable and deported. If it is outside or beyond the 10 working days, the person will be declared undesirable and be allowed to depart. But of course, the person has the right to appeal that decision and give reasons for why they have been delayed in South Africa and could not leave on time. With regard to the submission by Mr. Maxwell, CEO of South African Migration International, anyone who is declared undesirable may appeal the declaration. Prior to the implementation of the Immigration Act of 2011, the department was not declaring anyone as a pending application on production of proof of application. However, this system was abused because we had a situation where people would get to the port of entry, would have made copies of other persons' applications, and there was a whole lot of fraud involved in that. And that was stopped because people then started using proof of application for a visa and the visa that is actually issued. And the said system was discontinued. With regard to the submission made by Mr. January, the compliance officer for relocation online, anyone who is declared undesirable, again, as you say, may raise the reasons provided by Mr. Wesley or by Mr. January for consideration for lifting the declaration. So for all of the issues that he states there may be reasons for overstaying the country, those are the reasons. Mostly as we see that people make when the Sheikh of the Shaykh shall again be appealed, they give reasons such as these for the reason of the Sheikh. The department, of course, looks into the matter, looks at supporting documents that are given by the applicant, and then is able to make a decision to uplift or not to uplift the undesirability. With regard to the submission made by the Commission on Gender Equality, the current regulations will be amended to be in line with the amendments of the Act as proposed by the Immigration Bill. But yeah, I think as the Chairperson has alluded, these are issues of the regulations, and you will see that it is in alignment with the amendment of the Act that is being requested now. There are also challenges with this proposal in that it is going to encourage people not to apply for extensions or renewals of visas issued to minors, knowing that they will not have any consequences. So if any adult is accompanied by a minor, and the minor will also have a visa, and their visa expires just as the adult's visa expires, or the parent's visa expires, the minor will also have to apply for an extension to the visa. As Chairperson, we know that the other submissions that are made by Mongeri Bomela, the Law Society of South Africa, the Visa Religious Comment, and we know those made by Eben Schallenberg of the ACGT, the Chairperson of the ACGT. With regard to the submission made by Mr. Chairman, Visa Chairman, on the Zimbabwean dispensation, we say that this issue is really irrelevant to the provisions of the bill, and can also be dealt with by the department outside this process. In regards to the input of Mr. Neville Salt of Indian Travel
that amount, those that have got a lot of cash, then the fine is not. I think that is what the professor said. The